Good morning and welcome back to the KGNC Golden Spread Agribusiness News Hour. I'm your host, Bryce Hudson, and as usual, every Tuesday morning, we talk with somebody a part of the West Texas A&M Agricultural Sciences, as well as Natural Science Building here in Canyon, Texas. Today, I have sitting next to me Dr. Ty Lawrence, who is a head department of the animal science, but more importantly, the meat science aspect. How are you doing, Dr. Lawrence?
Fantastic. You?
I'm here. I'm doing good, and I'm blessed to be here at WT. Kind of get us started. You know, you've been a huge influential role here at WT, as well as, you know, moving buildings and, you know, creating some major changes at WT. So kind of tell us a little bit about your background and kind of what got you started in agriculture and meat science.
Sure. So I grew up on a cow-calf farming operation in Delhart, Texas, technically more about halfway between Delhart and Boise City, Oklahoma, and had the opportunity in 1993 to figure out what you want to do with the rest of your life. And so initially, I had plans to go and be a pipeline welder. Mm-hmm. That was my that was actually my goal at the time. And I was registered for pipeline welding school at South Plains College. Mm. And my dad, a much wiser gentleman than I, he said, basically, no way that's happening. we're gonna try a different route. And so he and I battled and fought and argued that entire summer as I was finishing up, graduating after high school. And his wisdom prevailed. And he said, you know, I'll tell you what, why don't you go to WT for a semester? And if I'm right, I'm right. And if I'm wrong, then I'll buy all of the pipeline welding school you can stand. And I said, okay, that's a deal. All I've got to risk here is one semester. And so, you know, the moral of the story is he's right. In almost all cases, he's right. And so he was certainly right in this case. And he said, you know, go try it out. So I came, tried it out. And I did actually leave for a few years, but I've been here most of my life now has been on this campus and in this community. And to say he was right would have been an understatement.
I know that here at WT, you have been one of basically the leaders of, you know, the meat science as well as the animal science program. So kind of discuss a little bit like what your program does here at WT and kind of what kind of contains for people who maybe want to be an undergraduate or even graduate school.
Sure. So in the meat science program, we'll do a lot of things. we do research that starts out at conception and continues all the way through the birth of an animal, the growth of that animal, the feeding of the animal, and obviously the harvest and consumption of it. So literally our research platform starts at conception and ends at consumption. And in addition to that, you know, we have a world-class meat lab downstairs below us right now. And in addition to that, we do research as an independent third-party service all across North America. Mm-hmm. We do research for major cattle feeders. We do research for the pharmaceutical companies. We do research for other universities. And we do research for the packers themselves. And so that gives the students a very unique opportunity to meet people, to shake hands, to experience different parts of the country, and to open doors that otherwise just wouldn't be opened any other way. Mm-hmm. And so there's fantastic opportunities for students of all majors that have an interest in understanding more about meat production.
And I know we're pretty well in a good spot to have a good meat science program. You got Cavanaugh, Tyson right next to us, right basically at our back doorstep, and just only 30 minutes close to us is Cargill. So it's kind of nice to have, you know, that system right there. I know that we're constantly going to these plants and facilities. Kind of what's some of the research that we've done as a university as well as yourself?
So at the industry level, we do tremendous amounts of research to mitigate and improve the rates of liver abscesses. That's something that my mentor, Dr. Montgomery, was working on in the late 1970s. and we've continued that research. We were working on those issues when I was an undergraduate student, and we're continuing to work on those issues today because it's an issue in our industry, not just here in the Texas Panhandle, but all across the Central Plains states. It's an issue in the Pacific Northwest. It's an issue pretty much anywhere that cattle are raised. Mm-hmm. There's just an odd issue there that is unique to cattle. In addition to that, more recently, we're doing notably a lot of work in salmonella and an understanding of salmonella. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you think food safety, you might think of E. coli in cattle, and you might think of salmonella in chickens and poultry products, eggs, things like that. But salmonella also does occur in cattle, mm-hmm. and it is a risk that is a little bit different than E. coli. And so the industry came to us a few years ago and said, we want you to help us figure out, how this occurs, how it gets in the cattle, and, you know, then the next step is, how do we mitigate it, and how do we reduce the likelihood that someone can take some of this, get it in their home, and or contaminate their other foods, cross-contamination, et cetera, et cetera. So how can we produce a cleaner, healthier, safer product for all of the Americans that eat our food, as well as the persons in foreign countries that some of these products ship to? Mm-hmm. So how do we produce a better, safer product?
I know that that's a huge thing, especially how much exporting and trading we're constantly doing with other countries, as well as, you know, even domestic sales. I know one of our biggest projects that WT ever experienced was, you know, probably a little over a decade ago by now, was creating Alpha. Could you kind of talk about what happened when we, basically this huge project that you started and created?
Sure. So if I go back to the beginning, the idea actually happened when I was in graduate school. Mm-hmm. And years and years ago, I was in graduate school, and, you know, I had hair back then. Not that I don't have a few hairs now, but I actually had a full head of hair then. But anyway, I saw a prime yield grade 1 carcass go by me one day in graduate school. Mm-hmm. And I thought, man, that was cool. And realized this was right after Dolly the sheep had been cloned. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of fresh on everybody's minds. It was front and center in the news every day. And then I see this extremely fantastic heifer carcass go by me in a slaughterhouse one day. And I'm thinking to myself, man, wouldn't it be something if we could take that carcass and then remake that carcass into the live animal? And it's just a passing thought that you have. You can kind of log it away in the back of your mind. And at this time in life, I'm a graduate student. You know, you have no money, you have no resources, and all of your friends are in the same situation. They have no money, no resources, and so you don't even tell anybody. You just log it away and move on. Mm-hmm. And so that idea just sat there for a long time. And then I go on and finish graduate school and go on for my PhD and go on into the industry for a few years, and then I come home to WT to take over the meats program upon Dr. Montgomery's retirement. And a few years go by, and we have a change of leadership in our department where Dean Topliff, or well, Dr. Topliff becomes the dean, and then we hired Dean Hawkins as our new department head. And Dean Hawkins was an expert in animal reproduction. And one day he and I are talking, and this conversation that we're having at this point was prefaced around Dr. Venneklausen and all of the success that he was having in horse cloning. Mm-hmm. So at this point, this is summer or fall of 2010 when we have this conversation, and Venneklausen is really getting to the point where he's cloning some very cool horses. And I bring this idea from the depths of my brain, and I said, hey, you know, a long time ago, I had an idea about X. And I told him, hey, why don't we take these really fantastic carcasses and take a tissue sample and turn that dead carcass into a new live animal? And then the point being, if we can find males and females that are exceptional in the carcass form, then we can crossbreed those and have new resulting progeny. And so he totally agreed. He was like, oh man, that's a great idea. Let's do it. And so we called a few people to make sure we could get all of this done, because the project is so complicated. It is beyond what any one or even a couple of people can do. Mm-hmm. And so you got to get a lot of people on board with your idea to do this. And within a span of 2 weeks, we had all those people lined up on board. Let's go. And so we started looking for tissue samples. And a cool part of this story is Dr. Tennant, now Dr. Tennant, was he was either an undergraduate or a grad student at this time. I don't recall exactly where he was, because he worked for me both as an undergrad and a grad student, but he's part of the team. Dr. Tennant's the one that found alpha, which is very cool. So he finds alpha in the carcass form, takes the tissue sample, logs all the data, and then we tissue bank it at the time. And then, you know, days, weeks, months go by, and we find the gamma sample. We found 45 fantastic carcasses in time. And we go through the motions to clone alpha, and then we go through the motions to clone gamma, and then we crossbreed them. And that's where things start to get cool. Yes, alpha is a cool animal because he... You know, he's the second life of an animal that we found in a carcass form. Mm-hmm. And the gammas are like the second, third, and fourth life of an animal that we found originally in carcass form. And so there's an element of that's some really cool science that we just did there. And then the next phase of that is kind of going back to my grazing and my childhood, if you will. So I grew up on a cow-calf operation with parents and grandparents that are experts and in tune with animal production, animal breeding, animal raising. And not that I didn't pick up all of that, but I became a meathead, okay? So you should raise caution if you have a meathead running an animal breeding project. And that's why we got Dr. Lust to kind of dilute my craziness down just a bit. So, but... In think about it this way. In all of recorded history, almost all of recorded history, animals were selected based on their outward phenotype. Mm-hmm. So you got to think, you know, you go to a bull sale. Man, I like the looks of that bull. And now we've got EPD, so I like that bull's data, things like that. But it all starts with the phenotype. That's where livestock judging really comes in. I like that bull and the structure, the muscularity, the depth of chest, the expression of rib, all the good terms we would use. And then you look over here, there's a pen of heifers. Well, I like these heifers, and here's why I like them, and all of the outwardly expressible and positive traits that those heifers display. And that's not that that's bad, but that's just the way it's always been done. So then the meathead comes along, and you got to look at it now from a meathead perspective. That's a beautiful carcass. This is a prime yield grade 1 carcass, and man, that thing is beautiful. And it just happens to be a steer. That's no problem, because when we clone it, that steer becomes a bull. Mm-hmm. And then here's a beautiful heifer carcass. Beautiful heifer carcass. So you gotta think a little differently. And all the meatheads in America can imagine this just like I'm saying it. It's just like a livestock judge looking at a bull or a heifer. They know when they see a good one. Mm-hmm. Well, meatheads know when you see a good carcass. It's in your being. You're trained to pick apart all of an animal's deficiencies. When you see a good one, you're like, man, that's the cat's meow right there. So the only problem is now I've got two carcasses. These things are dead, and I want to crossbreed them. Well, so what we call the cloning project is really an animal breeding project that began with a carcass. Mm-hmm. We needed cloning. It's like a tool in the toolbox. It's like you need this computer to record our conversation today. Mm-hmm. It's a very cool tool in the toolbox, but we needed it to go from dead animal to live animal. Mm-hmm. And then once we have two live animals, now we can breed them and have progeny. Mm-hmm. So we have these progeny, and then we start to test the progeny and test them against sires from, you know, all across the country. And our initial test, we compared alpha to very popular sires of Angus, Simmental, and Charolais breeding. Purebred Angus, purebred Simmental, purebred Charolais. Compared alpha to those sires. And used a herd of a local group, and they were very helpful in making everything happen. We bred about 1,200 cows to those four sires, and at the end of the day, alpha was equal to very popular sires in the industry. Mm-hmm. And it really didn't matter if they were Angus or Charolais or Simmental or they came from alpha. They were very good calves. They grew fast, heavy carcasses, high-quality carcasses. So from an industry perspective, it worked. Good mm-hmm. for the cattle feeder, good for the beef processor. This all worked. So then we went to round two. And then in round two, we compared alpha to his first son, which is what we call Alpha Gamma 1. Mm-hmm. And we also compared him to the number one bull in the Angus breed at the time, and a very popular Simmental Angus bull, so Sim Angus, half and half. And then there was another Simmental breed in there as well. So now, instead of being par with everybody, Alpha Gamma 1 was head and shoulders above everybody. So we got really good cattle, and then we got a superstar mixed in with some really good cattle. Mm-hmm. And we were thrilled because we put Alpha Gamma 1 up against the number one Angus bull in the entire country. And we were like, oh, heck yeah. So we felt really good about that. So we're actually doing the third one right now. We're comparing our sire, Alpha Gamma 1, to a very popular Angus sire on 2,000 Jersey cows. And so that project is in play right now. And we would probably know the answer late this year of how mm-hmm. things panned out. So we might have to do a follow-up if yeah. you're interested and see how it worked.
Yeah, and I know that, I came from Idaloo, so just right around the block, it feels like. Hearing that story of how, a university this small basically turned into something huge overnight, creating this project, it was really, really inspirational and really cool. Kind of got me pushed to come to WT. I got to ask, we talk about it as an ag comm student, kind of what society thinks about a lot of things. And some people believe that cloning can be a way to manipulate life to a sense and kind of hate agriculture for it, when in reality we're doing it for a positive reason. I kind of just want to hear your opinion and kind of your aspect as, a meat scientist who started this project and basically revolutionized, the beef cattle and meat science industry.
Sure. So let me start by saying a clone is no more than a twin, an identical twin separated by time. Mm-hmm. It's now there's some cool science and cool technology behind it, but another way to think of it is a really expensive Xerox copy. And those cattle don't know that they're clones. Mm-hmm. In fact, they don't know that there's anything special about them. They're out there eating grass, eating range cubes, forage, whatever's out in the pasture that all the other cattle are eating. Mm-hmm. They don't know that there's anything different about them than anybody else. They have no idea. And there's nothing unique about them other than we know you were a clone. Mm-hmm. You were not born via natural service or artificial insemination or embryo transfer. Mm-hmm. Nothing of your reproductive history is normal. You're a second life of a carcass. And the goal was not to, offend anybody. Mm-hmm. The goal was to show students, here's where we are scientifically. Here's what the future can hold. Think big. Think real big. And don't be afraid to push the boundaries. Don't be afraid to chase your dreams. Don't be afraid to accomplish some really cool things. And don't worry about being at West Texas A&M versus an Ivy League school or a Division I school. Mm-hmm. We've got the right people right here in Canyon, America, to do some very cool things in agriculture.
I agree. This university has done astounding things already, and I can't wait to see what it does. What do you think some maybe future projects, future ideas, or maybe something grad students are doing within the meat science aspect? What do you see the future of WT's meat science program?
So right now the future is more and more consumer education. Mm-hmm. And we're asked continually to allow people to come in and just see this and understand it and experience what we've built, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the near-term future. Not that the doors aren't open, but just do more and more and more, not per se with students. People aren't asking us to do less with students. The community wants more. Mm-hmm. So how can I bring a group from Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, New York, L.A.? I mean, the requests are getting further and further away from – local is not even a conversation. It is, how can I bring somebody from far away in to understand how all this works? And it's not just meat science. A lot of these requests back up to the feedlot. A lot of them back up to the cow-calf level. And people want to know and experience more than their little, you know, circle, wherever they are in America. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the near-term future, is that extension education to a big audience, mm-hmm. much, much wider than what you might anticipate.
I know that consumers sometimes kind of don't understand what happens in the meat industry very well, and kind of some perceive that, you know, meat comes from grocery stores, or doesn't understand where, you know, how their food ends up on their plate. And I gotta say, it's a great thing that y'all are doing sensory panels and different testing with consumers to educate them as what's happening out in the world. But Dr. Lawrence, I gotta tell you, thank you so much for coming out and getting to talk about, you know, your research, the program, and the future. And I've got to say thank you again for coming out and getting to speak with me.
Bryce, it's my sincere pleasure. And I want all your listeners to know that they're always welcome at West Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. Come by, you know, have a burger at our 1910 grill, walk into the retail store, go down and get a tour of the lab. You may see us in production. We might be slaughtering, we might be fabricating. We're doing something in that lab virtually every day. And if nothing else, run up to the second floor and hassle Dr. Keith.
I've got to tell you, come to WT. We're just around the corner. I know all my listeners out there aren't too far from Canyon, but come swing on by. It is a great experience to see the meats lab and the retail store and get to try some of the meat that we cook ourselves. But that's it from us here at the KGNC studio. I'm your host, Bryce Hudson, signing off. You have a great and blessed rest of your day.